My name is Jeremy Good, also known as Goody around some circles, and I just graduated from the University of Oklahoma this past May. Go Sooners. I've got a degree in letters, and I am currently getting prepared to head overseas for 2 years with the Journeyman program to go to Cambodia. And tonight's going to be a little different than most of the Vespers we have, because Mr. John Guffey and Rachel Redeker up here just got back from a 2-year stint in Cambodia with the Journeyman program. And so we're just going to talk about the Journeyman program and what it is, and you know, whether you guys would want to do that sometime, something like that. And there's a couple things that I want to get across to you before we have some questions from Jen Kelsey and some questions from you guys. So if you guys have questions, write them down, we'll get to you. First question that comes to my mind is, you know, I'm going to Cambodia, and these two have gone to Cambodia, and there's other people from the OU family who have gone to Cambodia. And so, is Cambodia the only opportunity for journeymen? You know, and so, I want to start by saying, no, it's not. And I have a list here that is a list of the job opportunities that they have for the journeyman people. And if you can see, each line is a different job, and these are all categorized according to regions around the world. So here we've got Western Europe, you know, we got some Belgium, England, Ireland, France. You flip the page, you got front and back on the next page, front and back on the next page, and you're catching on to this, you know, it goes through South America, Asia, Africa, everywhere else you can think of. There's 33 pages here in this thing of jobs that have been sent in from missionaries that they need people to fill. All right, and you can do the math. I don't know how many lines are on each one of these pages, but they need people all over the world, not just in Cambodia. And so that's why we're here tonight, to hopefully give you guys a vision. Just to tell you a little bit about what the Journeyman program is. It's through the International Mission Board, a.k.a. the IMB. So if anybody says IMB up here, that means International Mission Board. Okay? And the Journeyman Program is a 2-year program for college graduates under the age of 30. And it's a minimum of 2-year commitment. So if you guys are hopefully going to graduate someday, raise your hand if you're going to graduate someday. That's good. There's a few back here that don't plan on graduating. And how many of you will be under the age of 30 when you graduate? Okay. Then you guys, if you're willing to spend 2 years overseas, you would be eligible for the Journeyman program. And the last thing I want to get across before I sit down, and I'm sure you guys are anxious for me to sit down, is a lot of people ask me, you know, why would I give up 2 years of my life to go overseas? And I'm sure these guys would give a different answer than what I'm going to give you. But the first thing I would say to someone who asked me that is, I'm not giving up 2 years of my life. You know, these two people up here did not live the last two lives, or last 2 years of their life, I'm sorry. They did not live the last 2 years of their life in a coma. You know, they did not give up their life for 2 years. They simply invested it in other people. And if you looked in Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 14, you'd find a parable that Jesus spoke about a man who went on a journey, and he left all of his talents with 3 servants. And you guys know the story. You know, he left 5 talents with 1 servant, 2 talents with 1 servant, and 1 talent with the last servant. And he said, I'm going to go on a journey, and we'll settle the accounts when I get back. So the first one with 5 invested it, made 5 more, good for him. The second one invested his money, got 2 more, and good for him. The last one who got 1 talent buried a hole in the ground and stuck his money in it. And so when the master returned, he dug up the 1 talent. And he said, Master, I know you're a hard man, and I know that you gain where you do not reap. But I didn't want to lose your money, so I buried it, and here's the 1 talent you gave me. And the master was furious. The master took the talent from him, and gave it to the man who already had five and gained five more. So he then had 11. Okay, that's for the math majors out there. And if you equate this to a life, let's say that a talent is not a measure of money and it's not a measure of ability, but let's say that a talent is one life. And God gave you one life, which He's done, because each of you are sitting out here and you're breathing and your heart is pumping Kool-Aid. So He has given you one life. And, I mean, I'm asking you, what are you going to do with that one life? Are you just going to stay comfortable your whole life and go to church on Sunday and, you know, go to youth group and do whatever you do and essentially bury your life in the ground? Or are you going to go out into the field somewhere and invest that life and try to make a couple more along the way? And that's why I want to spend 2 years in Cambodia. You know, I'm not giving up my life for 2 years. I'm trying to invest it for 2 years and trying to get a great reward from that. And so I think Jen Kelsey is going to come up and ask us a few questions that she has prepared, and then it will be open for you guys to ask us questions. And I'm going to let Rachel and John introduce themselves so you will know who they are.
Why don't we go ahead and do that part? Rachel?
Okay. My name is Rachel Redeker, and I am the sister of Kirk, and Kirk goes here. If he's ever told you any bad things about things his brothers and sisters did to him when he was little, they're all true. And that might explain why he is the way he is. But I was a freshman at OU in 1994, and I studied finance, and I graduated in 1998, and I'm from Frederick, Oklahoma. Okay, that's all I'm going to say for now.
Hi, I'm John Guffey, and I went to school here a long time ago, even longer than, long ago than, far, never mind. I was a freshman in 93, and I crammed 4 years of school into six, and I went to physical therapy school. And I'm from Ringwood, Oklahoma.
Which place?
Ringwood.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah.
Oh, near Enid and O'Keefe.
Northwest Oklahoma's people.
Well, like Jeremy said a few minutes ago, you will have an opportunity to ask questions. So if you anything that they say in the next half hour triggers some other thought in your head, write that down, and we will let you ask some questions a little bit later. When I first heard about the Journeyman program, kind of like the rest of you in this room, I thought, that must be for people who think they're going to be missionaries when they grow up. So that's really not for me. What would you say to people like me who thought that? True? Untrue?
I don't think it's true. I think a lot of us, like if you've grown up in Southern Baptist churches or even other churches, I knew I grew up a lot of times going to church camp or whatever, and they wait till the last night to have this emotional appeal to get people to surrender their life to missions or to the ministry or something. And I saw people making those decisions when I was young, but I never made a decision like that. And all through high school and even the first 2 years of college, I never thought I would end up overseas. But I knew that God wanted me to go overseas as a journeyman, and I still haven't committed my life to be a missionary for the rest of my life. What I have committed to do is to follow God wherever He wants me to go. So if that entails missions, then that's fine. I've already surrendered to that. But if it entails something else, I've already surrendered to that too. So even having gone for two and a half years, I was there about 2.5 years, even now I still wouldn't say that I've surrendered my life to full-time missions. So no, I wouldn't say it's just for people who think they're going to spend the rest of their life overseas.
Kind of along the same lines, I was afraid, kind of like Jen was saying, I was afraid that if I would, my younger years in college, I was afraid that if I did something like that, God would call me to be a missionary or something like that. And as I began to pray and to walk with God a little my relationship with God grew more intimate. God changed my desires. And you guys, going overseas, whether it's for 2 years or whether it's just for a summer, God can change your life. And if you ask Him to, He will. And that's really one thing that I discovered was that primarily I wasn't going overseas for someone else. I wasn't going overseas to change other lives. God wanted to change me. And because He changes me and because He makes me more like Himself, then other people are affected.
I'm currently not planning on being a full-time missionary.
So what was it, at what point in your college careers did you decide to start thinking about this journeyman program as something that you might really do? How did that process come about?
It was the summer before my senior year in 1997, my first senior year, and there was three. And actually, no, that's not true. I went back and was a junior again, but anyway. We went overseas to Cambodia for a summer trip, and really, I don't know why I went, because I didn't have anything to do that summer, really. And I heard a lot of people saying that God can change your life and that everyone needs to go overseas, whether that's what you want to do the rest of your life or not. And that's my story.
I never thought that I would go overseas, and I remember even in high school and at the beginning of college that I told God I would never go overseas. I was very close-minded about that. But somewhere around my junior year, the first 2 years of college, I was really closed off to a lot of things. And like Aaron shared in his testimony, my parents were here at the BSU when Max first came. And so I always knew about the BSU here and about the discipleship and everything here. And so that's why I came here. But I really don't know why I did that, because I really didn't want anybody to get too deep into my life. So I wanted discipleship, but I didn't want people to get involved with my life. And those are kind of go against each other. But somewhere around my junior year, God really started to work in my heart. And I went on that same trip in 97. But I remember it really began to solidify for me my senior year. And I remember when we used to go to Glen Eyrie for spring break, there was a speaker there. And I don't remember a whole lot about what he said, but I remember the main parts of his message. And he was talking, I think, about 2 Timothy 2:2, but I could be wrong. Anyway, the thing that he was talking about was living your life with no reserves, no retreats, and no regrets. And as I sat there and listened, I realized that's really how I wanted to live my life. When I got finished, when I die, when I stand before God, I want to know that I lived my life with no reserves, that I didn't try to start something and give up when it got too hard, so I didn't want to have any retreats, and I didn't want to regret not doing something that I should have done. And it was really funny, because when I went through orientation as a journeyman, every day in my journeyman class, we would all eat our meals together. And we had these little centerpieces on our table, and I found this quote that really summed that up for me. And every day at lunch, we would have this dramatic reading of this quote on the table, the people at my table would. And you could interpret it however you wanted to and say it in whatever voice you wanted to. But the quote said, it was from a pastor, and it said, "Let's not walk into heaven with a clean uniform. Let's get it muddy and bloody. I want to drag into heaven all beat up." And I thought, that's kind of what no reserves, no retreats, and no regrets means. It doesn't mean living a life of ease and then just kind of waltzing into heaven one day when you die, but it's going and knowing that you gave everything that you had to see a lost world come to Christ.
I guess the first time I really considered the journeyman program was last semester, just a few months before I was set to graduate. And I'd never really considered it before then, because I'd planned on being, you know, settled down, starting a family about the time I graduated. But Obviously, that's not happening. So, you know, I've been overseas a couple of times on summer trips and just loved it. You know, just something about it, you know, just really hit me. And so, I don't know, the thought of spending 2 years overseas in a country like Cambodia just really struck my chord. And, you know, got more and more excited about it the more I thought about it. And, you know, basically thought it's not against God's will to go out and share the gospel. And so, unless God stops me, I was going to pursue that. And God hasn't stopped me thus far. So.
Tell us what you guys looked like as freshmen. What was that year like for you guys? And did you learn anything that year that prepared you for what you did as journeymen or what you're going to do, Jeremy?
As a freshman, I was at OSU Okmulgee learning to be a body mechanic. And the journeyman program was probably the furthest thing on my mind. But as far as how that shaped me, I don't know. It gave me a great desire to come to OU when I was there. So I guess that kind of led me on the path. I don't know.
Jeremy, if you want to talk about your sophomore year, we'll let you do that.
I'm not prepared with that.
And my freshman year in 1994, I lived in Walker on the fifth floor, and Walker 5. And I don't know. I don't really know if I really did anything that would help me prepare that year, except that I saw that I had a lot of things that I needed to do. But I got involved in FE that year from the very beginning, and I started to really make some close relationships with other Christians. But I was one of those people that was really slow to catch on. I wasn't really, I don't know, maybe on the outside I looked like I was going along with everything that I should be doing, but really inside I wasn't. It took me about 2.5 years to get there. So if you're a slow starter, there's hope, because I was one of those people. It took me a while.
I was, as a freshman, I was kind of like Rachel. I went to FE, but I was really kind of on the fringes as far as getting involved here at the BSU, and I really regret that. I really wish I would have jumped in head first, but I had other things on my mind, and in about 2.5 years, God got my attention, and like I said, He started changing me, and I met some guys that I really saw that were walking with God, and they loved their life. It wasn't boring. It wasn't mundane. And that's really where I got started. I lived in the stadium, so like Ben and Stuart and Dart now do.
Woo! I'll go ahead and talk about my sophomore year. No, I'm ready. Okay. My sophomore year, I lived in a Walker 11. There are a few guys here that live in Walker 11, and I'm pretty sure it was my sophomore year that some of the older people in the BSU, you know, the juniors and seniors, started getting together once a week to pray for the world. And they would pray for specific countries and, you know, pray for specific missionaries that they knew around the world. And fairly confident both of these two people went to those prayer meetings. And some other people that are currently overseas and just getting back. And I guess that's when I really started thinking about overseas missions. Because, you know, we'd get together and we'd pray about all these lost people in the world. And then, you know, it's like, well, why aren't we doing something about it? Or at least that's what I thought in my heart. You know, these other people are already doing something about it. But I started thinking about that. And so I think that kind of set me on the path, you know, of just going and praying with the older Christians for the world. So.
Okay. Later, You guys obviously all graduated from here and were part of this ministry. What kinds of things did you learn later as juniors and seniors and seniors and seniors that prepared you as far as your spiritual walk with God goes? What kind of things did you learn here that really prepared you for the mission field?
I think I've had a lot of time to reflect on this, and I think one of the best things that I did my last 2 years or 2.5 years at OU is God really was showing me a lot about what was in my heart, because you know that the heart is deceitful, and sometimes we don't really know what's in our heart. But I remember being at a retreat my junior year, and I just really asked God to show me what was in my heart. And I was really shocked at the things that God revealed to me, because he showed me that I had a lot of unforgiveness and bitterness in my heart. And I think I spent the next 2.5 years going back through relationships that I had with people from high school or college, just whatever, relationships that weren't right in my life, or things that I had done against people, allowances that I had made for sin to creep into my life. And it was really kind of a cleansing time. It was really very difficult to go through. But I saw that through those 2 years and the things that I was learning, when I look back now, I see that God was showing me a lot about spiritual armor. And that spiritual armor isn't something that you can just say, okay, God, I'm praying on my belt of truth. I'm praying on my helmet of salvation. You can't just pray it on like that. But there are things that you need to be doing in your life in order to put those things on. And one of the main things is relationships with people, being at peace with people, and not having bitterness and unforgiveness in your heart, and to really believe that God's word is true, even when you don't feel like it's true. And so I was learning a lot about the spiritual armor and how to really have it on, because if you go overseas and you have bitterness or things like that in your life, you're not going to be effective. Because Satan doesn't want you there in the first place. And if you go over with places in your life that are very vulnerable for attack, Satan will attack you there. Because I saw people on my own team in Cambodia, other Americans that worked with me, that hadn't dealt with those things. And I worked with people there who had a lot of bitterness in their hearts. And they were not effective. And they were actually very destructive to other people on the team. And so I think that one thing about really letting God deal with the things that were in my heart prepared me the best to go to Cambodia, because Satan couldn't attack me as easily as if I had gone over there with wrong relationships and different things like that, because you're not going to run away from those things when you go.
A lot of the things that you learn here at the BSU, as far as disciplining your life spiritually, I know at one point I thought to myself, why memorize scripture? I can read, but I don't know how many times, a young Christian would come up to me and say, I have a question about something. And I, oh yeah, we'll look right here. And you could open it up and you knew right where it was. And having a quiet time, just like Aaron was talking about earlier. Rachel hit on this. Satan is I don't know if you say more active, but it just seems that way in a spiritually oppressed country. And y'all, there was some, I'm ashamed to say, there was some things that passed in my mind that I just couldn't believe. And if I didn't have that daily quiet time, who knows what I would have done. Or if I would have gone crazy or something, And so a lot of the things that you learn here, I mean, they don't teach you stuff and they don't encourage you to do stuff here that aren't useful, really. The other thing I wanted to say is that if you think that, if you sit here and tell yourself that you're going to wait until you're ready, spiritually, it's never going to happen. God will make you ready. And whenever He tells you to go, then you should answer.
Jeremy, why don't you tell us about the application process and what, if any, kind of training or help do they give you in to get you ready to go?
The application process is quite lengthy, and so I'd like to start by saying that if anyone in here is, you know, just remotely considering doing the journeyman program or something like that, start your application process a good 3 or 4 months before you plan on graduating. And that's because the first thing you do is you have a little 2-page application, which is really easy. You know, it's like, what is your name? You know, where did you grow up? Are you an American citizen? You know, stuff like that. Simple questions. So you turn that in, or mail that in, actually. And then if they approve you through that, then they send you the big, like, 10-page application where they have a lot of essay questions, open-ended questions about your spiritual life, about your spiritual walk, really in-depth questions that can really hurt. You know, if you have wounds from the past, those questions will dig into your wounds a little bit and make them hurt a little more. But so that takes a while. They want a 10-page, I think, autobiography, 8-page autobiography, something like that. They want 8 reference letters. So that all just takes a while. And so you send that in. If they approve you after that, they fly you out to Virginia for 3 days, where they give you an interview. You get to talk to regional representatives from all around the world while you're there. You get to decide where specifically you want to go during those 3 days. And I guess that's about it. And then, you know, they fly you back home, of course. They don't just fly you there and leave you there. They fly you back home, and then they make a final cut after that, you know, who they're going to send overseas, who they're not. And so that's where I am. I've just been accepted. And so now I will be heading off to orientation in 2 weeks, which is 5 weeks long, and I'm not sure what they're going to teach me there. So maybe you guys can take it from there.
They're going to teach him how to minister cross-culturally. They're going to teach him about how to keep himself healthy. They're going to teach him about spiritual warfare. It's been a long 2 years is a long time ago. I don't know. They prepare you pretty well, though.
Does it cost anything?
No.
Financially, I mean. And can you make any money?
Actually, they pay you to go. They pay you a salary. They rent a house for you. You have health insurance through them that covers just about anything in the world. So really, it won't cost you anything at all. Some people even pay off debt while they're on the field. But some people manage to save money, and some people don't.
Not me.
So if I have a big school debt, I really could go.
Since I'm closest to this, I guess, with the application. One of the requirements for applying for the journeyman program is that you don't have a lot of debt. But what they're talking about is like credit card debt and, you know, car payments, house payments, stuff like that. If you have large debt, they won't take you. But if you have a school debt, the IMB, International Mission Board, is a nonprofit organization, and if you do your research, you can defer a school debt as long as you're working for a nonprofit organization. So, you know, you can pay off little pieces of your school debt while you're there, but you can actually have it deferred for 2 years. So a school debt should not keep you from going overseas with this.
What if I'm not a member of a Baptist church?
This program is just for people who have been a member of a Southern Baptist church for at least 2 years, because the money that pays for it comes from Southern Baptists, and so that's the way that they have it set up.
What if I'm married?
You can be an ISC-er, which is an International Service Corps, which is basically the same thing. and you both will go.
And your kids, if you have kids.
This next question is kind of about your degrees and how they worked in the field. I know when I meet, especially with girls on campus, is who I especially meet with, sometimes we kind of have these ideas of what we want to do when we get out of school, and it's frustrating or to keep our focus and motivation on this degree. And you're like, well, maybe I don't really see myself being a physical therapist for the rest of my life, but I'm trying to get this degree. You guys all three got degrees. Did you need them for this job that you took as journeyman? Did they help? Did you get to use anything that you learned across the street here?
Well, it was really important, actually, for me in just getting there. In 1997, right before we left, I found out that I got accepted to PT school, that's physical therapy school, and we went over there, and I don't know, some of you may not know, there was a civil war or something, and we were there for like 6 years. And, 6 days, sorry. It seemed like 6 years. No, it didn't. We were there for 6 days and we had to come back, okay? But while I was there, I found out that Cambodia just happened to be per capita the highest rate of amputees in the world because of war and landmines and things like that. So I was like, wow, I'm going to be a physical therapist. That would be really great. And I did use it. In a lot of countries especially, you have to have a platform to get in because they won't just let you come into their country. And for me, I could use physical therapy to get into a lot of closed countries. Say, yeah, I'm a physical therapist. I'll come and work at your hospital. And then you can do kind of behind closed doors discipleship after that.
Well, I got a degree in finance. And I went over to be an English teacher. And so I didn't necessarily use my finance degree every day, but it helps to know how to handle money, no matter what you're doing. But I did at one point become the business manager for our office over there, but it wasn't a fun experience, so I really wish that I hadn't had that degree so they wouldn't have asked me to do it.
Like I said, I have a letters degree, and I don't know how that'll help me anywhere in the world. But I loved it. But as you're thumbing back through this 33-page list of jobs, there are so many different needs. I mean, medical people, nurses, business people, computer people, engineers, law people. I mean, you name it, they need people all over the world. So, you know, pretty much any degree, except maybe letters, can be useful overseas.
It may not be useful, but it was useful for the application, because you really have to have a degree in something to fill out the application and get accepted. So we're glad you got accepted, Jim. Well, we really haven't let him talk any about the relationships you made on the field. What makes it worth it? Why do we go? Why did you go? Tell us a story about someone that you're missing already.
Well, Jamie Cleaver was my roommate there, and he just got back today, actually. We lived with five other Cambodian Christians, and they were college students. And I'm going to miss them all, and I miss them all. And I really want to see them again soon. And what was the question? But making it all worth it was, you know, if I went over there and I was practicing physical therapy, I would have been really miserable, I think. I really do. Because I went to the hospital in the morning for 4 hours or so, and then in the afternoon we had a student center where we taught English, and we did a lot of teaching from the Bible and things like that. So a lot of Cambodian college students come to know the Lord through that. And I was just thinking to myself, if I was just practicing physical therapy and I wasn't involved teaching English and discipling those students, I would have really been miserable. And because that made it all worth it, let me tell you. Maybe I don't want to talk this long, but God just really, I'm going to get off on a tangent here. I was driving a couple months ago after I got back, and I was thinking, why did I go? You know, I ask you, God, to change me, and I don't really feel like I'm any different now after I got back. And God started showing me some things. For one thing, while we were in Cambodia back in 97, He showed me a verse in Jeremiah, chapter 20, verse 9, and Jeremiah had just been beaten, I think, or something. He wasn't feeling too good, but he said that. He said, God, your word is in my heart like a fire. The fire shut up in my bones. And if I don't speak about you, if I don't talk, if I don't prophesy to the masses, he said, I can't hold it in. And that fire in his bones, I felt that. And it was a little more real to me after I got back, because I got to experience discipleship. I got to experience hungry young Christians wanting to know God. And it was really exciting. And I've never experienced anything like it. And so what that did to me was it reinforced to me that when I get back here, whether I go overseas again or not, I need to be involved in God's purpose for my life, which is God's purpose for all of our lives, which is discipleship, which is helping other people come to know God, helping other people to grow. And if I'm not doing that, like Paul said in Acts 20:24, life is meaningless.
I think that in Cambodia we had a really unique situation, because we were there at the very beginning when the student work was starting, and John and I were there, and Jamie from OU, and my roommate was from OBU, and we had all been discipled in college. We had all been through BSUs where discipleship was emphasized. So when we got there, we had a pretty good idea of what we wanted to do with these students, because we were just going to kind of do to them what had been done to us. And I think we saw, when I first got there, I knew two or three students who were Christians. And after I was there for about 4 months, students just started becoming Christians like crazy. And we really got to do a lot of discipleship with them. I think one person in particular that comes to mind when I think about the relationships that I had there is I think of a girl named Lekana, and she became a Christian at the end of June in 2000. And shortly after she became a Christian, about in October, we started meeting together every week for Bible study and prayer and different things. And I just got to see this girl grow so much. And she was so obedient, and she was so hungry to know God's word. And I saw her go through some very difficult things. She had a cousin who died, and Lek and I had been trying to witness to her and share with her, and she was with her cousin at her deathbed pleading for her to become a Christian. And her cousin was so sick she couldn't speak, and Lek and I was asking her if she wanted to accept Christ right before she died, and her cousin died, and Lek and I has no idea whether or not she ever made that decision. Lekanah's father was a spiritist, and he did rituals over people to exorcise demons out of them or to heal them and different things. So she had seen people possessed by demons since she was a very young girl. But she became not only a girl that I discipled, but she became my prayer partner. And sometimes I would just mention things in passing to her, and she'd come back a few days later and say, well, I've really been praying about that. I know when my brother, when Kirk went into Kazakhstan, I told her, and she started praying for him every day. And she was praying for this focus team that went over to Kazakhstan. So when I'd get these emails from my brother telling about things that were happening, Lek and I was so excited because she was praying for these people in Kazakhstan. And she emails me a lot now. One of the neat things that really happened with her is we both chose a non-Christian to start praying for together. And when we would meet, we would always pray for these people. And one of the people that we prayed for was one of my good friends named Panu. And Panu became a Christian about 2 months before I left. But the neat thing was, is Lek and I had been praying for Panu for almost a year. So by the time Panu became a Christian, Lek and I just kind of said, this one's mine, and took her under her wing, and she started discipling Panu. So I get emails from both of them, and Lek and I will email me and say, I'm going to go over this with Panu this week, and I'm really excited about it. And then a few days later, Panu will email me and say, this week I studied about this with Lek and I. And so I get to keep in touch with both of them and the things that are happening in their lives and the relationships that you make there. If I could give you one piece of advice about being a journeyman or go overseas, go somewhere where you can really build relationships with people, because there are a lot of jobs out there where it seems real exciting. You can go jump around to all these different countries and do different things, or, you know, things that seem real exciting, but the ones that are really going to change your life and are really going to give you a good idea of what missions is about are the ones where you get to stay and you get to invest in people. So that's the advice I would give to you if you're looking at going.
Let me talk again. Jamie and I lived in, we lived in a house with five Cambodian Christians, and John and some of those guys that went in, was it 99? The 2000, okay. They named our house the Madhouse for some reason, and so that kind of stuck. But five of those guys lived with us, but at any given moment we might have, you know, 12 or 15 guys, and, you know, 10 guys or 12 guys sleeping at our house. So it became a real great opportunity to both non-Christians and Christians alike to minister to them. And it was really, really neat to see that, kind of like Rachel was saying, the torch was passed, and, you know, the things that we taught these guys when they first became Christians, they began to disciple others towards the end. And there was a bunch of them, and maybe about 10 of them that were really, really growing and really, really hungry.
Why don't we spend some time praying for journeymen and for Cambodia specifically, and then we'll answer some of your specific questions. What can we pray for tonight? What people can we pray for? What parts of the application process? Another one of our students, Brian Crumpler, you guys might know him as the guy who ran the sound booth last year, is preparing to go in January, I believe. Is that right? You're both going pretty soon?
Sometime.
Brian's going also, so we can pray for him. Nope. We won't pray for him. We will pray for him. So what specific things can we be praying about?
There's, since Jamie left, Jamie was kind of running the student center. There's a new director. Their names are
Jeremy
and April Langley. And they're really good, and I think they're really going to do a great job there, be more long term. So you can pray for them, and especially for the transition now.
I think praying for people who are in the process, or if you're thinking about going through the process, because it's not easy, and it will be a spiritual battle when you go through it, and there might be obstacles that come up, or sometimes you just totally feel defeated and maybe like you're doing the wrong thing, or Satan will really try to put things in your mind or in your life to keep you from going. So it's really important to pray for the people that are going through the process. And we do desperately need laborers over in Cambodia. Desperately.
Pray for Goody.
And Chris. He's another guy that will be going through orientation with me. And he's got this same vision I have for university students in Phnom Penh. And so we got to room together at our 3-day orientation, and We're excited about living together, excited about working together. So you can include Chris as his name.